Gravitas Impact offers a global community of the world's top business coaches. We strive to empower our coaches and clients alike to achieve their extraordinary goals.
Hello, everyone. This is Keith Kupp, CEO of Gravitas Impact Premium Coaches. And today we get to welcome to our podcast, Brad Giles. Brad is an author, seasoned CEO, and coming to us today from Perth, Australia in his office. Brad is author of the book Made to Thrive, a book about CEOs and five key roles. Brad, welcome to the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Keith. It's good to be here.
Okay, great to have you from halfway around the world too. And as we were preparing for today, Brad, you had a thesis or a statement to say to CEOs listening today from the mid-market. What do you want to say to those CEOs in regard to the Made to Thrive content?
Well, in order to make your effort count for the most, it's important to understand that the role of a leader, the role of a CEO, is really about not doing other people's jobs and doing your job. And that sounds seemingly obvious, but understanding what great looks like, understanding where you're performing relative to that, and stopping the activities that are other people's jobs and only focusing on your own job is really quite important and is actually pervasive through many, many of the leaders that I've observed and certainly interacted with on this material.
Okay, that's great. I've got a big smile on my face, Brad. I'm gonna sharpen that statement a little bit. And CEOs, stop doing other people's jobs because you're not doing yours as good as you could. So that's another way to say it from where I sit. So Brad, before we get into the background of that, tell us a little bit about yourself. What gives you the right to say, to talk about this? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I'm a lifelong entrepreneur. I've founded six companies. I've always really been interested in building great companies. I would say that's really been the passion of my life. Started my first company in my mid-teens, and I've always been trying to understand the difference between good companies and great. And obviously that statement indicates that Jim Collins' work resonates quite strongly with me. But really when I was growing a company quite fast, so in the early 2000s, my company was one of the fourth fastest growing company in Australia. I was really getting onto any kind of material that I could that could help me to understand what do I need to do. And it was a real problem because I couldn't find a prescriptive book or manual on how to be a great leader. What was the activities to do? There were a lot of books about how things go bad, and there were a lot of books about how companies can work well, but I couldn't find an actual book that defined this is what the leader must do in their leadership role.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for that, Brad. And CEOs, I've had an opportunity to preview Brad's book and go through it both in my role and in applying it, but also with other CEOs. And I found that these five areas are very, very critical and very, very helpful. And so, Brad, back to your statement then, and let's develop that a bit. CEOs are often doing the work of their direct reports, and that gets them out of their greatest and highest use and value and success. Talk about that a little bit, Brad. Develop that a little bit more for us.
Yeah, so CEOs, maybe because they're passionate about an area, maybe their background is sales or engineering or something else, maybe they don't necessarily completely trust some of their people and they feel like they need to help. But whatever the motivation, a lot of CEOs can sometimes try to help their people and their leadership team or other people around them. But the problem is that they're not really helping at all. In fact, they're doing a lot more damage than they know by doing other people's jobs. For example, if you have a sales manager and the CEO continues to come in and help, and I say that in brackets, help the sales manager with the sales, the sales manager never really takes ownership of that. And the CEO is always coming in to rescue them. But more importantly that, the CEO is abdicating their own key leadership roles. Now, often that is because leaders don't want to or are unable to get out of their own comfort zone to really push beyond what it is that they're doing in the day-to-day to completely trust and to give those other people their own sandbox and then to carve out their own individual sandbox and accountabilities and responsibilities as a leader. By abdicating these important roles, they don't actually create the real results that great companies can achieve.
Okay. So, Brad, in a moment, I want to go through the five roles of the CEO that helps them thrive. But one other question. Have you found that because CEOs may not be clear on what these five roles are, then they either default back to, as you mentioned, where they've come from, a sales, et cetera, or due to the lack of clarity, they get involved in their direct reports jobs too?
Yeah, absolutely. So leaders, they just don't know. And I come back to myself in the early 2000s. I was just looking for a prescriptive guide on these are the things that you've got to do. Don't let this component go because it's just so important. Simply understanding that there are roles that a leader must undertake is quite important, because if we were to go and say to the average listener, what is the result that a leader should produce? They might straight away say, "Oh, net profit or shareholder return," but that's not it. There's so much more than that. What about the culture of the organization? What about if attrition rate is really, really high? As a leader, there are a number of roles that people must undertake, not only focused on the end result of, for example, net profit or shareholder return or whatever may be your first go-to.
Okay, great. So for CEOs listening in right now, I would encourage you to take out a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen, or if you have your keyboard up, write these down, because these five roles are just very critical to focus on in order to get the outcomes as the chief executive in the organization. Brad, take us through the five roles to begin. Then I want to go into a little bit of depth in each one.
Yeah. So the first one is about accountability. So accountability means that there is accountability for all employees and suppliers. So that's important because a lot of leaders are very reluctant to hold people accountable. Now, that kind of seems obvious, but gee, I've been hanging out with leaders, CEOs, entrepreneurs for 20, 30 years, and there are so many occasions where people don't set clear expectations, number one, and then don't hold people accountable, whether it be employees or suppliers, and that is the role. It doesn't mean that you need to be militant necessarily about it, but you've got to set very clear expectations, and you've got to have every single person know where is the line in the sand at which enough is enough. On the first day of work, wouldn't it be nice if you knew what would happen to fire someone? Because I'll tell you what, I bet that the person who's just been employed would love to know that. So accountability, number one. Number two, the CEO performs a strategic role as an ambassador. So you can't be the head of a company unless you are also the face. What I mean by that is a really important part of what a leader does is being an ambassador, is going out and meeting new employees, either physically or virtually, introducing themselves, being the brand of the company and actively acting in an ambassadorial role with customers. So attending perhaps new customer or contract signings that are quite important to your organisation, perhaps developing a platform of speaking or blogging. But of course, this is all in context of what will work best for you as a leader. Not everyone is interested in speaking or blogging, but understanding the opposite of ambassador, the ambassador role, is someone who sits in their office, doesn't meet anyone, and there is no aspirational, visionary, involved leader that people want to follow. And so we really have to focus on and understand and build systems around the ambassador role. Number three is a positive culture unites the team and attracts the right people. This is kind of obvious, but who owns that? Does a culture just happen? What I'm suggesting here is that a leader must own components of the culture and own it in the way that it needs to be done. So that is things like, for example, everyone in the organization knows core values and core purpose. I think for the coaches on the call, they might be nodding their head when they considered how many of their clients, every single person in the organization, don't actually know the core values and core purpose, to the point where it's not possible to misunderstand. And they might know them, or they might be able to recite them and say them to your face, but do they really actually understand them? That's the question. Of course, then next is the company strategy delivers a unique and valuable position in the marketplace that's different from competitors. Again, if the leader or the CEO doesn't own the system of the strategy, then no one does. If you go to the salesperson is when the salesperson starts a job, they're going to say, okay, so where are the leads? Then we go backwards and we go to the marketing person. The marketing person's going to say, okay, so what's your strategy? How are you going to be unique in the market? So each of the functions within the business are going to look to the leadership for the strategy. And it's not necessarily that the CEO needs to develop the strategy. Clearly, the leadership team needs to develop the strategy. But what's really important is that the CEO owns the system and ensures that that occurs. And that's through things like quarterly and annually offsite meetings, a lot of those type of things, ensuring that people know the big, hairy, audacious goal, a lot of those types of things. Then number five, key risks to the business are reduced through succession planning. So that's the succession planning component or role of a leader. May seem less obvious at first glance than the other four, being accountability, ambassador, culture, and strategy. But without an element of succession planning, revenues and profits can be on a roller coaster. And what I mean by that, we want to stabilize revenue and profit because of our succession planning efforts. So, for example, if half of our sales team leave to go and work for a competitor, that's going to be quite a problem, and it's going to significantly affect the revenues and profits. Clearly, we're going to have to recruit new people. So working within the business to ensure that there is succession planning around the people, in the example of the sales I've just given, in terms of suppliers, in terms of customers, and also in terms of the financials, making sure that there is rigidity in the decision-making around financials. So that's the five roles generally: accountability, ambassador, culture, strategy, and succession planning.
Okay, great overview, Brad. What I want to do, we won't have time to go deep into all of them. I want to ask a couple of questions around maybe two of them. Let's look at accountability. In the book, you talk about how everyone needs to be very clear on their role and their outcomes, and everyone is to weekly report two KPIs around their role. Can you talk a little bit more about that and maybe even give us an example?
So what is a really interesting question to ask is ask the same question of a leader and a person. And so what I mean is, if we were to say to a leader, pick a random person by the name of Joe. So how well does Joe understand success in the leader's eyes, the CEO's eyes, on a scale of 1 to 10? And then we ask the same question of Joe. We may get similar or different answers, but very rarely is it going to be above 7 or 8 out of 10. In other words, they've got a pretty clear understanding. A lot of the time it'll be a 6 or a 7. And that really comes back to the clarity of the role. And it's certainly been my observation. So often people don't really absolutely understand exactly what's expected of them. And that's not relative to benchmarking for employee industry sites or anything like that. It's simply what's expected of them in terms of metrics and the quantity of metrics. In other words, you need to sell 100 widgets from the perspective of their leader. And people just seem to let that go. So there's no doubt that KPIs and measurement is nothing new, but understanding that, really understanding that and having the leader know the importance of people regularly reporting on that is critical to the accountability. One important part of that is we don't want the leader to give them the results, or we don't want the HR person or some other person. We want the person to create their results and present those results so that if they're consistently read, for example, people, they're not going to want to be read. And in this is really quite important, because that may seem a little bit harsh to speak excessively about accountability, but accountability goes hand in hand with culture. So we want lots of love and lots of discipline. We want to cultivate our people, and we want to hold them accountable.
Okay. Yeah. That balance is very, very important. And so a kind of interesting exercise, CEOs, as you listen in, leaders, as you listen in, is choose somebody in your organization in a reporting relationship, and then ask them separately to write down, hey, what is your role and what are the two most important KPIs you report to your manager? And then ask the manager the same question separately. Have them write it down. Take a look and compare those two things. As you said, Brad, it's going to be, you know, fascinating on the disconnects in organizations. And once those disconnects are tightened up with clarity and measurement, you get a much, much better execution machine with the company. Brad, one other thing on this, and then I want to go down to succession briefly. On accountability, you talked about also accountability outside the organization with partners, suppliers, and vendors. How do you do that? Talk a little bit more about that. That's something that may not be happening very often out there in mid-market companies.
So it's been my observation, a lot of the time, when people exit a person, and a person or an organization, internal or external, they just have had enough. There's something that happens and it frustrates them, and they don't say anything about it, and they don't act on it, they don't do anything about it. But it comes back to my point a moment ago, the vendor or the person, they don't understand what success looks like in one's eyes, in the leader's eyes. So to your point, let's imagine we have engaged a marketing company, and the reason we've engaged a marketing company is we want to grow our brand and we want to get more leads. At what point should we get rid of that company? At what point should we fire that company? We should be thinking about this before we engage them, before we sign their contract, before we've even necessarily decided on which one we're going to go with, which marketing company. So if I was the marketing company, I would certainly want to know that. I would want to know, okay, if we don't get 10 leads per week for this customer, we're out the door. We're at the very least taking a step towards the door, for want of a better metaphor. So it comes down to being clear and transparent in your expectations. But of course, in order to do that, first of all, you've got to understand your expectations. So communicating that quite clearly to suppliers is to be frank, it's a decent thing to do. We want success. We want them to succeed. We want our relationship to succeed. But so many people just have a relationship where there are niggling issues that are eating away at it because there isn't clarity and transparency on the expectations and what success looks like from the perspective of the leader or CEO.
A key underlying principle, Brad, that you're surfacing here is have the same level of expectations and measurement outside the organization with vendors, partners, and suppliers as we do as leaders inside the organization. So I want to shine that spotlight for our listeners. Have the same amount of rigor outside as inside. And Brad, let's briefly turn to the last item, succession. So the bookends, accountability and succession planning. Often when we talk about succession planning in the owner's eyes or the CEO's eyes, the president's eyes, they begin to think about their succession of themselves. But you're going deeper in the organization and talking about for all of the key roles have a succession plan. Is that correct? And talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so that's an important point. So one thing that we haven't touched on, I want to briefly touch on, is by undertaking these roles, what actually happens? So for example, if you undertake the accountability role and you undertake the ambassador role, you achieve a higher percentage of top performance. If you undertake the ambassador role and the culture role, you achieve higher retention. If you undertake the culture role and the strategy role, you achieve higher productivity. If you undertake the strategy role and the succession planning role, you achieve consistent growth. And then finally, if you undertake the succession planning role and the accountability role, you achieve consistent results. Now, that's important in the context of your question because we want consistency. I come back to what I said before about the roller coaster. Having started, founded, run many companies, I know exactly what it feels like to make a large profit and large revenue one month and then very little or a fairly healthy loss the next month. The roller coaster is no fun for anyone. So the way around that is succession planning. So to your question, it's about key roles, key suppliers, all of the components that make up the fundamental major parts, really, of your profit and loss, the major and key contributors. So, for example, in terms of suppliers, it's about having a regular review, at least a short conversation about what do we know about our suppliers? Are there any material risks there? So one of the stories from the book is about a customer I work with, and about, I think about 80% of their goods came from one supplier in the Northern Hemisphere. We're in the Southern Hemisphere, and they decided to shut down their factory, and he provides a product which is required, it's mostly sold. Most of his revenues come through the summer, which is clearly the northern winter. So they shut down their factory selling summer goods in the winter. And then what happened is that was our summer. So suddenly he couldn't buy stock through his busiest season. If he had planned for that, if he had had these conversations, that may not have happened. So the point being, understanding if you want to get consistent growth as a result and consistent results, i.e. regular and consistent revenues and profit, you've got to undertake the succession planning role around the key components of the business.
Okay. Thank you, Brad, for that. I'm just glancing up now. Let's begin to turn towards closing our podcast for this time. First of all, Brad, what's a CEO to do? Okay, so you've given some great insights into the five roles of a CEO to help them thrive. What action would you like them to take based on what you've shared thus far? What should they do with this?
Well, there's two answers. So the first is, if you don't know where to start, start with culture. So start with the culture role, understand the culture role, and then work backwards. What I mean by that is begin with the culture role, and we know that comes from Pat Lencioni and Jim Collins. First of all, get the right people on the bus. So work on the culture and then work backwards and then work on the ambassador role, then work on the accountability role, the succession planning role, and the strategy role. So working backwards around the star, which is the image that I use in the book, is important if you don't know where to start. The second option is, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? Is it a higher percentage of top performers? Is it higher retention, productivity, consistent growth, or consistent results? And if it is one of those, for example, higher productivity is the great problem, or consistent results, as I said earlier, you're on the roller coaster. If you're on that roller coaster and you want to achieve consistent results, I'd suggest succession planning and accountability are the areas that you need to work. And within the book, each of these has five sections, each of these roles, and each of those sections has a tool. So there are tools that you can work through to become better at those roles and get closer to those results.
Brad, when is the book generally available? It's coming, I know it's available in Australia right now, if I'm not mistaken. When will it be available in the business press worldwide?
So it's available for pre-order now. The general release date is the 1st of November. If you'd like to get an overview, I have a YouTube channel and I detail all of the roles and the sections through 34 videos on that YouTube channel. If you search Brad Giles or Made to Thrive, you'll be able to find that YouTube channel. But again, the book is available 1st of November and there'll be resources on my website as well.
Okay, excellent. And Brad, one last item here. Let's step outside the four walls of the book and what you do day to day. Tell us a little bit about Brad Giles. What's important to you? What drives you in life and what's important to you?
What drives me? I think building great businesses drives me. That completely disregards your question. I appreciate that. I'm pretty passionate about that. People spend most of their time at work and it just eats me up inside that people aren't effective, that people put all of this effort in and they're not making their effort count for the most. So that's something I'm really quite passionate about. It's front of mind most of the time, which makes interesting conversation for my family. But really, my family is very important to me. I live in the greatest city in the world, but don't tell anyone, just you and I, about that. We've got a great lifestyle here with beaches nearby, fantastic weather, fantastic climate. That's probably the summary. Very passionate about people who can be more effective and just that wasted energy, number one, and helping people to become better versions of themselves. But really, very passionate about my family and where I'm at in life.
Okay, and having been to Perth, Australia myself in a younger year, I can affirm that it is a wonderful place to visit. And CEOs listening in, if you're in the neighborhood, I'm sure you can reach out to Brad. Say hi when you're in Perth. Author, coach, entrepreneur, Brad Giles, Made to Thrive, The 5 Roles of Successful CEOs. Brad, thanks again for joining us today.
For more valuable content and actionable resources, visit www.gravitasimpact.com.